You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, July 17th, 2017.
There is a cost to the taxpayers. Just because they pass away doesn't mean that the responsibility for them stops. Somebody has to be responsible for them.
Later in the show, WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn speaks with the Monroe County Coroner about the increasing costs of sending deceased overdosed victims to and from Terre Haute.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Janet DeLong talks about her experience as a physical therapist for volunteers in medicine. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Speck Mellencamp, son of Bloomington-based singer-songwriter John Mellencamp, was arrested yesterday morning and charged with public intoxication and resisting law enforcement. According to the police report, the 22-year-old and his brother, Hud Mellencamp, were involved in a fight in front of Jimmy John's on Kirkwood Avenue. Speck was described in the report as having, quote, blood all over his face, end quote, and acting, quote, very belligerent and uncooperative, end quote, with police and medical personnel. Speck did not provide officers or medical staff with information about how he sustained his injuries. Hud Mellencamp was released after giving an official statement, which said the fight began with a group of guys, quote, mouthing off, end quote, at the Mellencamps. Both brothers have had similar incidents with police in the past. In 2013, the two were charged with felony battery after a fight, and Speck spent 8 12-hour days at the Monroe County Jail.
State officials admitted the I-69 project has suffered from mistakes at this month's State Budget Committee hearing, according to the Indiana Business Journal. Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Luke Kinley said he believes there are a lot of lessons to be learned from how the state handled the project, especially from the failed partnership with a private developer for Section 5 of I-69. Section 5 is the 21-mile stretch of road between Bloomington and Martinsville. Kinley criticized the state for focusing too much on low bids and not enough on the background and credibility of the bidders. I-69 Development Partners, the group the state initially partnered with that included the public-private partnership, bid $325 million for the Section 5 project. That bid was $73 million lower than the next closest bid. Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Kinley suggested signs that the company could not financially complete the project existed before the state agreed to work with them. Kinley said the state failed to see in advance the company wouldn't complete the interstate. The public-private partnership is dissolving in the midst of financial troubles between the I-69 development partners and contractor Isolux Corson. Originally, the company planned to build and maintain the highway for 35 years. That was under the state contract. Now, the state plans to take over the project entirely. Because the state's credit is considered better than the developers, Governor Holcomb's fiscal team says costs for the project will actually decrease when the state takes out bonds for the project, possibly saving taxpayers around $30 million. The Indiana Business Journal also reported Democratic State Senator Karen Talian of Portage, Indiana, said of the situation, quote, it looks like we're getting out. It looks like we're not going to get hurt too badly, unquote. Section 5 of the project is scheduled for an August 2018 completion date.
The Monroe County Convention Center Advisory Commission has selected a developer for a proposed convention center expansion. Indianapolis-based Sun Development and Management Corporation outshone two competitors to gain the commission's favor. In the commission's July 11th meeting, commission member Pat Stofers explained why he felt Sun Development is the better choice.
Taxpayers. Just because they pass away doesn't mean that the responsibility for them stops. Somebody has to be responsible for them.
The 90-year-old Convention Center building is located at West 3rd and South College and was once the home of Graham Motor Sales. The county converted the building into a convention center in 1991, then remodeled it in 2012. This year, the county put out a request for qualifications, seeking a developer to construct an expansion. The expansion proposed by Sun Development focuses on a 200-room hotel with a pool, business center, and fitness room. The hotel would include 1,300 square feet of meeting and banquet space. Commission member Jim Murphy said, although he's okay with choosing Sun Development, he'll like to see some changes to their proposal.
All the expansion of the convention center was within the hotel. For the betterment of the community, I feel that needs to be expanded to expand the convention center as well as build a new hotel with some meeting space as well. And I know that's a conversation that we'll have going forward as we negotiate and discuss this with them. And I know I specifically asked the question when they was presenting, would you be willing to consider amending your plan to add additional space to the convention center? And to me, that's very relevant and very important to me.
Of Sun Development before the Advisory Commission can work with the company on refining the project.
The Board of Directors for the Monroe County Solid Waste Management District are reviewing their 2018 budget, which may include a 3% raise for employees, as well as a possible longevity benefit. In the Board's July 13th meeting, Board Chair Cheryl Munson said the district is reviewing two versions of the solid waste management budget.
Let me note that consideration of two budgets has become usual for the district in recent years. Since the board has wished to consider the fiscal implications of different future operations. Last year, for example, we considered acquiring two roll-off trucks and personnel and benefits to operate them. And this was done as a contingency.
In his summary, Director Tom McGlasson Jr. said, the 2018 budget allows for moving forward with the creation of a mixed waste processing facility, sometimes referred to as a MRF, while maintaining the current level of service.
That would include the free recycling drop-off at five locations throughout the county, available 5 days a week, free household hazardous waste recycling and disposal for Monroe County residents, available 5 days per week, the free e-waste recycling for devices without a screen for Monroe County residents, available 5 days per week. Providing reuse options for residents through the Materials for the Arts program and their reuse drop-off pickup locations at all the recycling centers, both available free of charge.
McGlasson said current budget proposals would include a pay raise, adding that his employees have not received a raise since 2015. Budget discussions will pick up again on Thursday, July 20th, and will include input from the district's Citizens Advisory Council. Board members stated they anticipate approving the budget and amendments on August the 10th. The Monroe County Council will be the next body to review the district's budget. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Monroe County Coroner is seeing an increase in costs associated with death investigations driven by the opioid epidemic. Taxpayers are footing the bill. Reporter Sarah Vaughn spoke with Monroe County Coroner Joni Shields for today's community report.
Monroe County Coroner Joni Shields told the Monroe County Council last week that the number of deaths requiring investigation is steadily rising. I spoke with Shields after the meeting. She told me she and her staff have investigated 108 deaths as of July 14th. That's up from 94 cases from the same time period last year. Shields says the opioid crisis is driving the increase in her caseload.
Anything that's not natural, and even some that end up being natural deaths, come through the coroner's office and are investigated. So, by it being an overdose, it's not considered a natural death, and we have to investigate those.
Shields said her office is on track to exceed 200 cases by the end of the year. That's up from last year's total of 189. An increase in the coroner's caseload also means an increase in costs, which are taxpayer-funded. In last week's county council meeting, Councilmember Eric Spoonmore asked Shields to lay out the costs associated with an investigated death.
Let's say there's an overdose, somebody passes away. I think there's this conversation that I've been hearing more and more kind of gaining steam, and I think it's pretty preposterous on many different levels that when somebody overdoses, that they would, on a second or third overdose, there would be no emergency response because of the cost that it entails to respond to those kind of cases. I think it's more expensive if it's just about the money, and that's what people are concerned about, which we know it's not, but if it truly is just about the money, it would be more expensive, I think, is my hypothesis, to just let those folks die. So could you kind of outline the costs of a autopsy and everything that would be associated with a pauper burial and all the other types of costs that you would incur
Sure.
as a result of that?
An autopsy, so there's many things that factor in. Autopsy is $850, and that's just for the forensic pathologist. There is a $250 charge for the use of the facility, which is Terre Haute Regional Hospital, their morgue. Transport one way is $225 to transport from IU Health Bloomington Hospital to Terre Haute Regional Hospital for the autopsy. If they are brought back, that's another $225. IU Health Ambulance Service, if they transport from the scene, if they die out in the community and they transport from the scene to IU Health Bloomington Hospital, that cost is $175. Toxicology, if it's basic drugs of abuse, is $225 for just basic drugs of abuse. If we're looking for something more specific than that, it depends on what it is. The costs vary with that.
Shields has made efforts to keep costs down. She's changed the lab through which her office gets toxicology reports to one that can produce tests faster and for less money. Cost also influenced her choice to use a Terre Haute forensic pathologist for autopsies.
There is one closer in Bedford. However, the fees that our office would incur to send one to Bedford is roughly $600 more to send them closer. And those the autopsy fees are set up by the forensic pathologist. It's not a fee the hospital sets. It's what the pathologist sets. It's all a private service.
Shields estimates the average cost of an investigated death due to overdose ranges between $1,600 and $1,900. By comparison, the county pays only $37.50 per dose of naloxone, or Narcan, the drug used to revive overdose victims. Shields adds that a growth in the homeless population is also driving her increased caseload.
Our homeless population is growing, and it's evident. It's a fact. It's not just fiction. It's really happening. With that comes poor health style, poor life choices, and, you know, they don't, it's not that the resources aren't there for them to go get. It's you have people that choose not to go to the doctor. So ultimately, how it impacts my office is more and more when they don't follow up with physicians and stay on top of their health, and when they pass away, that death has to be investigated by my office because they don't have a doctor to say, oh, well, he had high blood pressure or he had a history of cardiac disease. Another aspect of it is family members. They don't always stay close to their family. So when somebody passes away, even if there is a doctor saying, oh, yes, I knew they were sick, there's still somebody that has to find that family, a loved one out there that needs to be notified that they have passed away. And that's where our office comes in, is that then our office is contacted and we do the legwork and find the family so that the family is properly notified that they've had a loved one pass away.
As for funeral expenses, Shields told the council that local township trustees end up footing the bill in cases where the deceased is homeless or indigent or their family is unable to pay.
Usually between $900 and $1,500, they will fund out of the trustees' money for somebody that cannot afford a burial. They try to lean towards cremation because cremation ultimately is less expensive.
And I've done a little checking around town with some of the various funeral homes, and it seems like the average cost for a pauper type of situation is about $3,000, $2,500 to $3,000.
Correct. And when the trustee does it, the funeral home agrees to accept whatever the trustee pays them.
Of the 11 townships in Monroe County, Shields told me she works with Bloomington and Perry townships the most.
If they have no address, and a lot of them don't have an address, or are the ones that use like the Shalom Center address, when they pass away, if that's their address, then it goes through Perry Township. And I've dealt a lot with Perry Township trustee's office over the recent few months. And that's, you know, ultimately the township trustee's money, that comes from tax dollars.
With the number of investigated death cases rising, Coroner Shields expects she will have to ask the county council for more money before the year's end. She also anticipates needing a bigger budget for fiscal year 2018. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, I'm Janet DeLong, and I volunteer with Volunteers in Medicine. I've been a physical therapist for 34 years. You know, I was interested in volunteering at Volunteers in Medicine. I'm going to call it VIM. For years before I started, I was just busy as a physical therapist, at that time just with IU Health. I just saw that even though I was helping people, hopefully, there was a group of people here at VIM that were able to volunteer and give of themselves instead of doing a job. And so it's different somehow to be able to come and give time for people who need it. Hopefully I'm helping them, but really it helps me because I feel like I have more of a purpose. Volunteers in Medicine has a great mission. They help people not only to have medical services when they don't have insurance, but when they have insurance and they don't know how to use it, or they fall between the cracks, or life is just overwhelming and there's just no way they can go through the hoops that it takes when you do have insurance. Volunteers in Medicine has morphed itself as the needs have changed. They've just adapted and continued to provide for people in the community. This is a fantastic model of integrated care where there's a whole team of people who work together for the good of the patient for all the right reasons. It's a great place. I would say that Volunteers in Medicine is an amazing organization filled with people who are creative and are very dedicated, who have learned to let go of some of the tight hold on busyness and things that don't matter, and just be with patients, make plans for them, and then allow the patient to be themselves. So when those plans don't quite go, we make a new plan. And my favorite thing is to help them to do something themselves that changes their pain or changes their symptoms. So they realize, oh, I have power over this. I can do this. And it gives them hope. And so I don't know that I would have ever really gotten that in such a clear way if I hadn't been here at VIM. So I would encourage anyone who is a provider of anything, any kind of healthcare, any kind of medical field, and even a wellness field, to get involved because there are lots of opportunities. And if there isn't an opportunity right now, I just trust the leadership to find something. Because when somebody presents with a gift, then they'll figure out a way to use it and better our community. Well, thanks for listening. I'm Janet DeLong with Volunteers in Medicine.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. Bring your creativity to the Behavioral Health Units of Bloomington Hospital as a volunteer muralist. IU Health is seeking three artists to contribute their vision of calming natural scenes and a tree of life image in the halls to enhance their patients' experience. Or share your interest in energy conservation by volunteering as the Monroe County Energy Challenge's Energy Bus Outreach Coordinator. The Energy Bus is a mobile energy lab that helps local residents receive hands-on education in renewable energy and home energy conservation. And finally, the summer sun is still blazing, and Bloomington Parks and Rec is about to kick up the heat with Bloomington's annual salsa contest at the Community Farmers Market. Volunteers participate by dishing out samples and keeping the chips plentiful. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
The Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Lindsay Jones, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, our partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Michael Glab. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.